Kate and Sam.
Yes?
If there were a pie or whiskey cocktail in your honor, what ingredients would you like them to include?
Bourbon.
Because it must be a Manhattan.
It must be a Manhattan.
Regardless of what it is. That'd be bourbon, vermouth.
Bitters.
Cherry. No orange.
No, it's people make the mistake of citrus. It's a mistake. It's wrong.
But I think for our cocktail, what actually would need to happen, it would need to be a Manhattan, but it would have to have a specific ritual around it. One of the rituals might be receiving a Manhattan with citrus in it so that Sam can send it back.
Because I'll complain about it. Right? Mm-hmm. That's an old-fashioned. That's not a Manhattan. Am I right?
You're right.
Okay. Because I get this. So sometimes you'll be at a bar, let's say in Portland, right? And there's a craft cocktail, and they're making some kind of – they think they're like, no, in 1891, actually, there weren't cherries in it. And I'm like, I don't care, dude. You can take your Civil War beard, and you can go back and get me a cherry and make me the Manhattan I want.
They don't like it when you talk to them like that.
They like it a little bit.
They like it when I talk to them like that.
They like it when Kate talks like that.
I'm thinking of some of the more fanciful things, too. Like, I mean, would you want some boot laces in your cocktail?
Yes, I do want boot laces in my cocktail.
Only if made with vegetable materials.
Well,
no
we
animal
always want,
boot laces.
And we want them stirred with a Civil War sword is the other big thing for us. We like that. But for pie, we like...
Lard.
We're
going to talk about lard. We want that lard that's been, like, encasing the kidney of the animal. That was like
deep
pulled
lard.
Out from the cavity of the animal and then stripped away from the soft organs and melted down and then cooked into really delicious pastry.
Beautiful.
Though normally we use butter.
It's easier to get, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know that everybody can eat it. You don't really have to put a sign out. Everybody knows it's made with wheat. People assume it's made with dairy.
Well, the lactose intolerant can't eat it. But we usually do accommodate them.
We've started to accommodate them.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson, talking with Kate Lebo and Sam Ligon about their anthology, Pie and Whiskey, Writers Under the Influence of Butter and Booze. This interview was made possible by the Montana Book Festival and contains raucous adult material. So fill a glass and put up your feet. Listener discretion is advised. For the 7 listeners out there who don't know what pie and whiskey is, might you tell us the origin story?
Sam, you started this one.
Do you remember
how this starts?
Kind of. Yes, I do.
Once upon a time.
Yes.
Once upon a time.
This is the part that's going to get edited. So it started in Port Townsend, where we teach in the summer at the Port Townsend Writers Conference. And it started about maybe 10 years ago.
Maybe.
About 10 years ago. Kate and I were both there. We were both teaching there. I didn't know that Kate was a pie expert. I had begun making a good huckleberry pie. Kate tricked me into baking.
I kept that back from him.
Kate didn't tell me that she was an expert pie maker. And somehow it came out that we both baked pie. Or Kate might say, oh, so you know how to make pie? And I was like, yeah, actually I do. And Kate was like, oh, so maybe we should make a pie. And I was like, great. So we went and got ingredients, and we made a pie. And our thinking was we'd invite a bunch of the writers to come have pie, because what we've noticed at the conference is that writers don't talk to each other until the last night of the conference, because they're worried that they're not famous enough and et cetera. So,
do I like you? Will you like me?
Yeah.
Do I deserve to be here?
It's like summer camp all over. Oh,
but worse.
Yeah. Yes.
So what we noticed was then we have the party on Saturday night. The writers start talking to each other. Then they all like each other. They have a couple drinks. Everyone likes each other. So our thinking was we'd bake this pie.
Well, and it wasn't just that they had a couple drinks. It was that the pie was there to keep things pretty sweet. So we've had the experience early on, realized if we just have whiskey, that's like any old party and things can get really dark really fast.
Right.
Particularly if you're only writing about whiskey once you introduce that. The pie lightens the whole thing up and creates that balance of...
It's the church vibe brought to the bar.
Yeah, Saturday night and Sunday morning.
I love it.
And it's more inclusive, too, because, you know, we're always going to have friends that don't drink. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I don't really want to go to this thing that's a whiskey thing. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas when we bring the pie into it, it's like, okay, yeah, I can go to that. So it feels like a broader event. So when we did it, we bought a bottle of whiskey, we had the pie, and people came, and it was really cool. So we did it again the next year at this conference, and it was just for the writers there. Then
my book, Commonplace Book of Pie, was coming out, and Sam had this brainwave, like, what if we bring this to Spokane, team up with Get Lit, and then ask a baker's dozen of writers to write on pie and or whiskey, and you can come bring your book to Spokane and bake for everybody. And I was like, cool, that sounds way more interesting than just a straight up reading. Let's do it. And we baked enough for maybe 50 people that first time, and probably 200 showed up. So
right.
We're like, okay, so this formula works, six. Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. And those numbers change all the time.
We make those numbers
yeah,
up.
Yeah, we make Don't, them up. We, but it was,
and, we've been,
the
and we've been busted
idea.
For this. Somebody wrote, reviewed the book, like, I've heard this said a different way. I've heard that it was actually six pies, not seven, and that there were 5/5 of whiskey, not six. So there was some amount of pie that wasn't enough, and there were about 6/5 of whiskey.
Nothing
and the craziest enough. Part was, there people were lined up for this stuff. We ran out of everything immediately. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So I went to the mic, and I was like, hey, we're out of everything. And so we're going to start the reading. So sorry, we'll have more next year. And I expected that everyone in line would just leave,
right.
Which is what I would have done. You know, they were like, you promised free pie and whiskey. You bring us here. You trick us. And now we got to hear a reading.
You and know? Now we have to hear
right. You want us to listen to poetry?
So somehow they stayed. The people stayed. And it was amazing. So and our thing, too, with the reading has always been, we say to the writers, look, you need to read for under 5 minutes. And they know they got to bring big game because it's really hard to hold onto the room. It's sort of like reading into a hurricane. And you know you're about to lose this room. And once you lose it, you're never going to get it back.
Right. And one person can lose it for the next people, too.
Yeah.
So it's also the readers have to become this kind of singular body of awesomeness that keeps everybody entertained and into it. The other thing that we found out from this experience was that by asking writers to write on these playful subjects, pie and whiskey, playful subjects that also are these crown jewels of Americana, and so we can respond to them kind of with love and interest and nostalgia, or we can rub against them with dislike and criticism and whatever, you know, conflict. All of these interpretations are possible. But through asking writers to respond to a playful subject, we got this really cool work. It was like we got them to let their guard down, and they wrote about sex and death and church and family and divorce and love. And
drugs.
Sam loves the drugs.
I do like the drugs. But they also, we also, because it's no kids, there's so many events at literary festivals. They're like, we're doing kids coloring this afternoon. Let's do some kid things in the morning. And we're like, let's not do some kid things.
Yes.
There's so many kid things. So let's do some things that are explicitly not for kids. So the writers are like, okay, then I'm going to write like an adolescent then. If there aren't going to be any kids here, what I'm going to bring is this, you know, like fart jokes practically. And that they don't really write fart jokes. Mm-mm. Kate didn't like that
didn't
at all.
I didn't like that. That's not true.
It's not true.
That's not
except
true.
For that one piece called Fart Whiskey by Jess Walter.
That's not true.
He didn't really write that. He will now, I bet.
Yeah, Jess Walter started using the pie and whiskey because we invite him every year. He started using that as a prompt when he was stuck on something else. So he now has.
He could have
know,
a whole
like,
book.
Yeah, he could do a whole book of these short pie and whiskey stories.
But what happened then was, so the writers were really good because they were also competing with each other. Because it was like, how are you going to hold this audience? You better be good. So they started competing with each other. There are no kids allowed. People are drinking. And it just fed on itself and became more and more fun. And then we were like, this would be a cool thing for Missoula. Yes. Because another place where this would work, we know it works in Spokane. Another place we think this will work is Missoula.
Right. And you know what's funny? By bringing it to Missoula, one of the things that happened is we got to team up with Judy Blunt, one of my favorite writers, also a fantastic pie maker.
Incredible.
And that kind of unspoken competition sprung up with the pies then as well. I don't know that Judy would describe it this way, but I know that Judy would say, oh, I'll make 7 pies. And then she'd show up with 15. And
totally.
It would be all different kinds of pie, all completely beautiful. And I would look at my 10 pies where I thought, oh, I was going to kind of equal Judy on the playing field and be like, oh, crap. Blunt
Judy
did
had
it
to
again.
She had to have her own table.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so
she's,
amazing.
She's such a boss, you
yeah,
know. It's so amazing cooking with her, watching her just fluency in the kitchen, her rhythms and her confidence, and how she can put all of this food together for so many people. Like it's nothing.
She was actually the only person Kate would allow to bring pies in. So early on,
yes,
people Kate was
true.
Baking, and we were baking 20 pies, right? And we were baking and baking. She'd have people help, and I would, of course, help too. But people would bring pie. And Kate would see it somehow across a room full of 400 people. Kate would see somebody walking in with a pie.
Nope.
And we'd go up and say, oh, thank you. And she'd take it and she'd walk away with it. And she wouldn't throw it away immediately. She would simply hide it and later would throw it away.
There's quality control involved.
That's what it was.
I have a reputation.
To uphold.
As
high school.
It's true.
Yes.
Exactly.
What? And can you just talk about pie school then?
Oh, sure. So pie school is my small business where I go around the country teaching people how to make pie, either in their kitchen or my kitchen. And all of the recipes that we work from when we make pie for Pie and Whiskey are from pie school.
But also there's a book called Pie School, which is Kate's book.
It's true.
In one of your pieces, you talk about the failure of pie crust.
Oh, yes.
And what is the line that you use when the pie crust fails, often because of temperature? When you tell people about their hands.
Hot hands.
Oh, right. I tell them. So, and this is true. Like 1 in 6 of my students has hot hands. They just run a little hotter. It comes through their palms more. And those people all have more trouble making pie dough because I teach a hands-on, literally, method. And the warmth of your hands melts the butter and it just makes a mess. And I tell them to run their hands under cold water, but that doesn't really work. There's just some people that are not going to be able to make pie.
I just want to hear off the bat, why not cake?
Why not cake?
This goes to the American thing, too, though we didn't know that at first.
What? Why not cake?
Cake's not American the way pie is. We didn't know that at first.
No, I think the thing about cake is that it has been commodified in such a way that you can make a pretty good cake from a box. And just about anyone can make a cake.
You can make a pretty good cake from scratch.
Yeah, of course you
can
make a pretty good.
That's also fairly easy.
Yes, it's also fairly easy. It's a little like pizza that way. Like even bad cake is good. Just like even bad pizza is pretty good.
Yeah.
Bad pie is so bad. So bad. And it's a food way that I think really needs to be passed down from person to person. You cannot pick it up off the back of a box.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even really pick it up through a cookbook. Some people can, but
you can't really even pick it up.
You now hope, Sam. Let's give some people hope.
Okay, you can. Sure. You can pick it up.
You can totally pick it up.
Great.
But I think because of that, when people show up with pie, it's a little more rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more special. Mm-hmm. It's a little more handmade. And in this case, it's like the way I make it. It's literally handmade. My hands are in the bowl, doing all the stuff. Work. You don't do that with cake. You don't stick your hand in the batter, though you could and it would feel good to your hand, but that's not really how you make a cake.
We also, and Kate's book, Pie School, is based on Northwest fruit. So these are fruit pies. So it's part of our region, too.
Right.
And that's really exciting because the fruit we have is so incredible.
Right. That is one of the things that I found out through writing that book, or realized through writing that book. I had taken for granted all of the excellent, excellent fruit that we have. And one of the very best things to do to fruit is not mess it up by not doing that much to it and just covering it in pastry. That's it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And the anthology you've released is Pie and Whiskey, Writers Under the Influence of Butter and Booze. And this book has come out in part because you've retired from the event?
No, we have not retired from the
event. Okay, tell me. Is
this
a hiatus?
Seem like we're constantly threatening to retire from the event. That's true. That if you perceive that, that is true. We're just resting this year. We've done, I think, like eight of them.
Yeah, we did like 6 or 8 in a year.
17?
Yeah, as we were,
because 56 of them.
We did like 100 of them.
Yeah.
But we were just doing it because we were promoting the book. So we did one in Spokane. We did one in Seattle. We did one in Portland. We did one in Missouri. We did one, I don't know where else. We did a bunch of them in a year. We did one here.
Right.
And we were like, okay, this is too much. And we're both working on other books right now. So we were suddenly, and so to do one just about kills us too, just to get to, it takes a solid week.
And the logistics of this are intense. I mean, like, I have pie kits. I have actual plastic tubs of equipment that we drive in. And then we go to a kitchen that we've never baked in before, where something always doesn't work and many things always go wrong. And our job is to figure out what's not going to work and how to fix the things that go wrong.
And it's
in
fun.
In time.
And it's fun.
It's really fun. But, like, that's always – it takes a lot. So – we're taking a break.
So we thought, how we want to keep this alive, so we need to chill. So with Montana this year, because we're both on other deadlines, we said, look, we can't do it again in Missoula this year because we got this other work we do. But we want to come read, but we'll bring it back next year. And so we're gonna do Pie and Whiskey in Spokane in April, and then we'll see what happens next year. Yeah. But we're just trying to slow down and chill because we want to keep it alive.
One of the things you mentioned in the introduction of the book is that the Pie and Whiskey event is meant to be sort of communal and collective. And I am wondering about then the book itself, because I will tell you that I read this book lying in a single man tent in the backcountry upside down, and I couldn't put it down. It was number one, it was so good, but also I was like, I don't have either pie or whiskey on hand. How do you mean for this book to be experienced?
That's a great question. Well, one of the things that we were thinking about, besides what are the best pieces that we've heard read at Pie and Whiskey, is what can this book do that the event cannot do? What kind of writing do we want to ask of people that would not work on this stage? So one of the things that we asked was for six of our favorite writers to do long pieces. So at Pie and Whiskey, people have to read 5 minutes or less. It's always a flash piece or one poem. In this case, each of these eight chapters, because there's eight slices in general in a pie, are anchored by a long piece that's between 3,000 and 5,000 words, and writers really get to let rip on the theme.
And so that's like Jess Walter, it's Steve Almond, it's J. Robert Lennon, it's Sherry Flick. It's Robert Lopez, and it's us, and we're writing longer works. We'd love that we could stretch out with that, but keep the feeling of Pie and Whiskey.
And I think by the time we were making the book, we were really starting to think more purposefully about, like, well, why Pie and Whiskey? And what are the themes that we've seen evolve over the last 5-6 years that we've been doing this? And how do we want to use the space of this book to really mature some of those themes?
And we were putting it together during the 2016 primaries, mm-hmm. and in fact delivered the book immediately. We were going to finish the book in New Orleans after the election. We flew into Vermont for a different thing, and the night we flew into Vermont was the night of the 2016 election. Then we had business in New York, and then we were taking this train to New Orleans where we were finishing the book. Well, I was rewriting and writing fresh some of these cocktail recipes in that wake of that, right before the election and right after. So that the tumult that was going on nationally was also really influencing the book. And one thing that Kate's talked about a lot with this book, with that community thing, is really important. One of the things we love is the different kinds of people that come to the event. So it's not just, there's not one political kind of person that comes, and we like that. And especially, I think we might even notice it more in a place like Missoula, but we notice it in Spokane too. Mm-hmm. We'll have ranchers come in, or people who are not the typical crowd that you might think it is. Mm-hmm. So that turmoil had us thinking also just about the country. So that's why we were thinking of this as an American thing, which is why the cocktails are all about American figures.
I want to get to the recipes and the cocktails in a second, but I just want to hang with the structure of the book, because one of the dizzying effects it had on me was, like, the poems are pretty obvious just in terms of the lines.
And they're great poets.
And then I found myself getting into prose, and I was like, what's fiction and what's nonfiction here? Mm-hmm. And I assume that was an intentional choice, that you didn't flag genre. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, is that, you know, how does that meld with this sense of pie and mostly whiskey? Is, you know, how do we sort of lose ourselves in the world of this book?
I mean, I think that you can't classify these pieces. I mean, they're certainly interested in the subject matter, and they tend to often go to these weird American themes. Or what did Gary say the books should be called? Pie and Divorce?
Yeah, Pie and Divorce. And Whiskey and Divorce.
Because so many of them are about breakups.
Gary's our editor.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Kate Lebo and Sam Ligon about their anthology, Pie and Whiskey, Writers Under the Influence of Butter and Booze. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Just a reminder, this program contains adult material. Listener discretion is advised.
One of the things that surprised me is at times the pie and whiskey themes are actually really subtle, you know, and at other times they're very bold and brazen. Steve Almond's piece is like
fantastic.
Erotic, domestic,
hilarious.
Domestic erotic.
But it's but that's a love story too.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I love about that piece. Steve writes this piece that when we first got that, we were out on Lopez taking a break, and I got that electronically, and I was like, you read the first line, and like, oh no. And then we read it, like, this is the funniest one of the, and he's hilarious. It's one of the, we thought, was this going to be porn?
Right.
And if, And it's got those porny elements, but it's a love story. And same with Jess's. You look at Jess Walter's piece, and you're like, oh, you're looking at this family disintegration. But it's also becomes, and it's super funny, and it's transgressive.
Yeah.
But it becomes really beautiful, too, I think, in the way he's always able to get to connection, I feel like.
And I think what's different about this collection, what might be surprising to readers about this collection, is I think a lot of people come to food writing with an expectation that it's not necessarily going to be that transgressive. In fact, it's going to be delicious, probably. And there's a kind of standard of palatability that writing tends to get stuck in food writing in order to deliver what it seems like its promises, which is to talk about food in a palatable, delicious, exciting way, right? And we don't have any food writers in this book at all. These are poets, memoirists, journalists, and poets, memoirists, novelists, short story writers, using food as a window into the stuff that they tend to write about.
So food is just an opportunity for good writing.
Right, and that might be disorienting within the genre of a food anthology. We often find this with the cookbooks, not with literary anthologies. And I often wonder how a reader of food work is going to feel when they open this up and not get what they expected. I hope they're excited.
It's a pleasant surprise.
That was our hope.
But I also think, for me, I just laugh all the time through this book. There's so much that's funny, mm-hmm. And so what's Alyssa's title? The whiskey swilling man babies of Tinder. And then there's that funny piece. And then there are these soaring pieces. So I think of like Robert Wrigley's poem, this incredible invocation at the beginning of this thing. I love Mandy Smoker's poem that has that same kind of really grand, really large weight. I love Judy Blunt's piece in here.
Wilkins piece is incredible.
So when he read that, the incredible thing about Wilkins, we closed the book with that piece. He's writing a quiet, beautiful piece about death. Right? You're in a room full of people who are drinking and eating pie and are here to party, right? And Wilkins reads last because we do go out alphabetical order. He read that piece. It's quiet. He brought the whole thing down. It was incredibly beautiful the way he read it. So we put it in the book and it has the same effect in the book. He read it here too in Missoula. Mm-hmm. Same effect. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. So really wide range. And I love it when somebody like Joe comes out. It's like, I'm not doing it. I get your game that you're going to be loud and absurd. That's not my game. So yeah. What I can do is this. And then he does it, and it's amazing.
And he has such a presence.
Totally.
Right? He can get away with it. Mm-hmm. Kate, I'm just wondering if you'll read a little bit of Three Roads to the Heart of Iowa.
Oh, sure. Three Roads to the Heart of Iowa. For the past 5 years, I've spent the choicest 3 weeks of summer and thousands of dollars making pilgrimages to Iowa. One year, I thought I'd go to Rome and study poetry. Then I met a woman on the internet who needed help baking pies in the American Gothic House, about 2 hours south of Des Moines. I'd make my bed in the parlor of the house that immortalized rural America. So what if I had to roll 100 crusts in 100-degree heat? Rome could wait. The next year, a ticket to Des Moines from where I was working in upstate New York cost $137 more than a ticket to Rome from that same location. In addition to the Iowa State Fair's famous butter cow, a statue of Kevin Costner would be carved in 25 pounds of butter before my very eyes if I got there soon enough, and I could help judge the Machine Shed Pie Contest. Rome could keep waiting. The year after that, I didn't pretend I was going anywhere other than Des Moines, but I added a twist. I'd drive there with my partner from our home in Spokane, Washington. Once you're miles deep in southern Idaho or eastern Montana or western Nebraska or anywhere in Wyoming but the Grand Tetons, you realize that this is how a person travels when she's been reared on eternity-long Catholic masses, followed by ambrosia and pancake feasts at the old country buffet. I trust gratification that's earned. In the interest of being gratified, I'll pursue a way to earn it. So what's Sam's excuse? To find the worn-out heart of America, he says, you have to take the long way.
I am most familiar with your writing through A Commonplace Book of Pie and through Pie School. And I just am curious, what is sustaining to you or tiresome to you about pie?
You know what? The only thing that's tiresome to me about pie is kind of battling the perception that is all that I do. It's kind of a encompassing and sometimes annihilating subject because so many people respond to it, get excited about it. But then it also seems so very simple, and it is so very simple. And so they might reduce me to just being a pie writer.
An apron.
But I find pie as a subject so very rich because of its connection to history, because of its connection to global history, because of the way it captures the cycles of our orchards and our fields. And I think because it's really funny. I mean, one of the original movie gags is a pie in the face. Right? There's something also stereotypically feminine about it that seems really useful as a way to just kind of investigate all of the narratives that I've inherited and enjoyed and tried to break down and out of and get back into again. This, I think, is going to be some of my last pie writing. Maybe. I don't know. At this point, I'm kind of steering the ship towards fruit.
I've paired your piece with a section from Sam's work, from the 13 Wonders of Tammy. Will you read number 4, Iowa?
Tammy loved animals of every kind, cats and pigeons and hamsters and goats and snakes and donkeys and buffalo. Most of the West is an animal park of some kind. If not Yellowstone, Yosemite. If not that one, another one. There's thousands of them filled with animals Tammy loved. And once we got there, I'd become a ranger, arresting the drunkard set on ruining the joys of nature for everyone else. Tammy would bring my supper to work in a cloth-covered basket, and after we ate, she'd stay and we'd kiss and pet the animals. At the Iowa State Fair, there were all kinds of animals, too, and giant things made of butter. A cow, the Empire State Building, things you didn't know why they were made of other things. We saw wriggling piglets and breeding stock boars with huge balls and names like Hillbilly Bone. We ate food on sticks and watched children ride sheep like rodeo riders. We walked through barns full of horses and rams, Tammy screwing up her courage to talk to the pie ladies in the food hall, the place her mother had won so many prizes as a girl. Tammy figured we'd make a Martha Washington pie and become famous because we'd made such an awful, enormous thing. But none of the pie ladies were interested. They hated Tammy's feathered hair and fringed boots. They hated her cut-off shorts and hummingbird tattoos. "Does anyone know," Tammy asked the panel of pie experts, "how much flour I'd need for a 6-pound butter crust? Does a bushel seem crazy?" Nobody knew. "Does anybody even know how much flour is in a bushel?" I asked, but Tammy shushed me. None of the pie ladies wanted to be Tammy's mom or grandma. None of them knew of a pan big enough for Martha Washington's pie. I practiced the art of money getting in the judge's lounge, but otherwise kept close to Tammy, loving her hard. Outside, it was 1,000 degrees, and politicians stood on hay bales screaming.
Tammy would need about 30 cups of flour. For that pie.
That's a real pie, that Martha Washington's pie. And we have the recipe in the book.
The very end. If you make it, we will send you 1 pound of butter and 1/5 of whiskey.
It literally calls for 6 pounds of butter, that crust.
That's incredible.
And it calls for like, what is it? A pigeon, a woodcock, a pheasant, you know, a pig's head. I mean, it's like the most insane stuff.
When I'm sitting here with both of your voices, you know, your two pieces, Kate, are nonfiction, and Sam, yours are so fancifully fiction, and I'm wondering about where do these two meet in your dynamism, right? This sort of tempered ability to write. You write these pie recipes, you know, that are very clear and distinct, and then Sam, it's like crazy what comes out of your brain.
The cocktail recipes.
Yeah.
Well, I know that whenever Sam's told that he must do something a certain way, he will do it the way he's told he should not do it. And so I think since he got interested as I was writing the pie recipes with how bossy that tone is.
I loved it.
How directive. Crack that egg. Put that flour in the bowl. You know,
yeah.
That's the grammar of a recipe. That's how it is.
I love that imperative.
Right.
Do this, do that, do this, now do this.
Right. And so I saw him start to violate that the recipe genre in a way that was super, super fun. But also totally just like Sam. It's like, you can't tell me what to do.
Right. But also, I mean, what you picked was really funny because that was obvious. I mean, that Iowa State Fair that I was reading from was what Kate was reading from, too. Mm-hmm. So we had been at that fair for a couple of years and saw the same things. And we were actually writing those pieces in Omaha, coming back from Iowa.
Right.
So it was really fresh in our mind. We stopped in Omaha and we're writing there. And we're able to bring – and that Iowa State Fair is fantastic.
Right. Right, and filtering these experiences, the same experiences that we had shared kind of through our different talents and genres.
Right.
Which is really fun.
Right. I mean, it's wild to walk through that in the book. I want to talk about the recipes. So there are recipes for both pie and drink, and there's a cake yum yum rum cake.
Oh, Nina's.
Possibly blueberry pie, chocolate pecan pie, whiskey shots, funeral pie, of course. Is that from Judy Blunt?
That is from Judy Blunt.
Funeral pie from Judy Blunt. And then there are the drink recipes. The Lonely Martha, Whitey on the Moon, Emma's Revelation. Can you just provide some context for why you chose each of the recipes?
Sure. Well, we started with, I would look at the long pieces that anchor each of the eight sections and then figure out a recipe that sprung from that piece or symbolized that piece in some way. So my piece, I end up writing about funeral pie. So, of course, I have to get Judy Blunt's fantastic funeral pie recipe. It's amazing that it's fantastic, that it's just such a kind of demure, not so great pie. But Judy's is great. Jess Walters' story has this great image. It ends on this image of these brothers drinking whiskey out of a pecan pie that they've doused in this whiskey. So, of course, I was like, oh, we should do, you know, pie shots. So the shot glass should be made from the pecan pie filling, and we'll just fill them with whiskey and call it good.
And they're incredible.
Yeah, they're
these
really
pie shots, the thing that Kate made with these little tiny pie shots, they're incredibly good. So you fill it with whiskey, you drink it, and then you eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And then Robert Lopez's piece, there's so much about it that's mysterious, indeterminate. It might be this, it might be that. The narrator is setting stuff up and then knocking them down constantly. It reminded me of the ways that so many fruit pies really are all exactly the same recipes. They're just these different substitutions of each other. And so I took that as an opportunity to make a very indeterminate pie recipe. You could make a pie from, but you'll also probably be frustrated by.
Right. And reading the pie recipes, I had a sense of like, oh, I can do this. And then reading the drink recipes, I was like, where am I? What is happening? So, Sam, will you talk about that process and maybe read one of our...
Yeah, sure. And so for me, because Kate was writing real recipes that were going to be actually useful to people.
Yes.
And I'm not capable of that. I don't think of myself as a mixologist. I don't know how to, you know, I'm not a bartender. I make one drink. I can make a martini. I can make a Manhattan. I can make an old fashioned. I like Manhattans. So I knew I was going to make that all the drink recipes were going to be a Manhattan. That's all it was going to be. But then I don't know how it turned out. I think I was interested in what Kate was doing and the imperative. And then I was also working on this other project with American history, which I'm still in the middle of. So I was reading a ton of American history. And that, and plus what was going on with the election. And for some reason, I just started writing about weird Americans in it and using Kate's, the tone I had learned from Kate, from her, that imperative, from her recipes. So I got the joy of play with the form, and I had a great time with it. And then I would, of course, run them all by Kate. She would edit them. She would say it really if they went in or not.
And it was really interesting. The way that I was using the recipe form, I feel really committed to delivering something the reader can use that's not going to disappoint the reader, that's going to fulfill their expectations, I think is a better way to say it. Where Sam's piece, because it's really messing with that genre, gets a lot of its humor, surprise, propulsion from the ways it is frustrating the reader's expectations of a recipe. You cannot make these recipes. We got this hilarious criticism from someone who was like, I don't understand. You cannot make these cocktails.
Right.
And we're like, yep.
We need to hear one of them then.
Okay. Okay. So here's the Lonely Martha is the first one in the book. Everyone knows George Washington cut down his father's cherry tree with a hatchet and couldn't lie about it. What most people don't know is that he also chopped off Thomas Jefferson's hands with a gator knife and then pretended he didn't. Jefferson was furious, of course. He took a glove between his teeth and threw it to the floor at Washington's feet. Everyone was sad and surprised about Jefferson killing Washington with a dueling pistol when he didn't even have hands. But then Benjamin Franklin bucked America up by inventing electricity and a classic craft cocktail called the Lonely Martha. And everybody won. Ingredients: a shrub, a hatchet, whiskey, sweet vermouth, a cherry, bitters, dueling pistols. How to make a Lonely Martha. Find a shrub and chop it down with the hatchet. Admit that you've chopped it down. Now make a Manhattan. I use bourbon, but you can also use rye. People in Wisconsin use brandy. No one knows why. Some people insist a Manhattan must be served up, that ice must not melt in it. These people should be driven back to Portland. But wait, you're making a cocktail. Make the cocktail. Admire the dueling pistols. Is the current president doing anything right? Who knows? Sip your drink and imagine how idiotic your face would look on money.
Kate, one of your essays opens another anthology that is presented itself at this Montana Book Festival. This is the place, Women Writing About Home. And I have now, you're the third of three anthologies that I've interviewed for this festival. I want you to make a case for why this anthology might be the one people should take home.
Oh, man.
Because it's better.
Because it's more better. I think this is an anthology that you can sneak onto people's bookshelves because they might be interested in baking or they might be interested in drinking, but not necessarily in poetry or in literary nonfiction or fiction. The subject matter, I think, is this fantastic Trojan horse that gets it into people's hands who wouldn't normally be reading this kind of weird literary stuff. And that's so often my motive with writing about pie, even, is like, how do I get a book on multiple shelves in the bookstore and get people who wouldn't normally read poems to pick up a book of poetry? And that, honestly, when that started to become a concern of mine, it feels that was like 10 years ago or so. And right now it feels less urgent in that I think way more people are really into poetry right now, which is super exciting. It's a lot more accessible than it used to. It feels a lot more accessible than it used to feel.
I've never heard you say the Trojan horse thing. I really like that. I think that's true. And the other Trojan horse in this book is that it's play. It seems like play, and it is play. The writers are definitely at play, and it's really cool to see a writer playing because it's fun. But this book is also dealing with all these big themes that literature always deals with, which is, you know, connection, disconnection, how we fall apart, how we come back together, how we're okay, and when we're not okay. You know, so it's dealing with all these really big, cool things that art always deals with, life and death and sex and, you know, all the beauty, but it's play. So that's a kind of Trojan horse too, which I really like. Mm-hmm. Take your medicine. Kate always signs the book.
Right. I sign Take Your Medicine and Sam signs Stay Out of Prison.
And then yours for this book is yours in Sweet Corruption.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And at the end of the book, you have a recipe for how to hold your own pie and whiskey.
Yes. I think that's one of our dreams, and one of the things that's really important to us is to say we don't own either of these subjects. We happen to have the brainwave to put
them
together.
49% we own 49% of the subjects, but we're not majority stakeholders.
Sam and I have different attitudes about this. Maybe Sam's a little more territorial than I am, but we work together.
It's part of my privilege. I'm exercising my privilege.
But I think it's important to say we don't own either of these subjects. It was our idea, and we have figured out a really good way of hosting an idea like this. And if you want to do it, you should do it.
Yeah.
You know, don't depend on us to come and throw a good party. You can throw a good party, too.
And the reason the party also works, so we talk about community. Kate, why don't you say what you always say at Pie and Whiskey's?
I think, well, one of the reasons that Pie and Whiskey do what they do, I think, is that, I mean, you can eat a whole pie yourself, and you can drink a whole bottle of whiskey yourself, but you probably won't feel that good in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. They're foods that improve when you share them and kind of beg for a community involvement.
So the communion aspect to it and fellowship that goes along with these, it's really cool.
It wouldn't be, you know, cupcakes and whiskey.
No.
Right?
And the other reason the event works is because the community brings a lot. So we get the liquor. We don't buy any of the liquor. The liquor is donated. So we get, I mean, it's a lot of liquor. I mean, it's 24 bottles of fifths of whiskey that are donated.
Dryfly has supported us from the beginning.
Dryfly Distillers in Spokane. Mm-hmm. Kate always gets support from grocery stores or from, you know, Doma Coffee
Company buys our groceries in Spokane.
Or what's the pie company?
Cyrus O'Leary's.
So we get all these donations. The place, we always get killer venues. They're donated.
Yeah.
You know, so the community steps up, and then all these volunteers help bake. They attend bar. They clean up. Get Lit supports it. So the community's invested in it, and that's also why it's cool. So the first 3 years we didn't charge anything, and I never wanted to charge anything. And then we found out it's illegal to give liquor away. So you're like, okay, we have to charge something. So now we charge $5. But what we found from that is that supports the festival. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, that's cool.
Right.
If it supports the festival, great. And that's how we did it with Montana.
Yeah. Pair with nonprofits.
Nice.
They get the profits.
So here's my very last question is, being in your presence is like, I mean, it's like being in the presence of a building hurricane. How do the two of you, creatively, you're so dynamic. When you go home, are you just like pinballs pinging off of each other? Or, like, or do you have separate floors?
We do have separate floors. Yeah. Yes, we do.
We have both of those things. We have separate floors in the house. I get the office nearer to the kitchen.
But also the better office.
Well, I don't know. You got a bigger office.
True.
I've got a better view.
And a bathroom.
And he's upstairs, and we are, you know, together in the morning. Sam makes my coffee.
Every day.
I make his breakfast smoothie every morning. And then we come back together at lunch. Sam will make me a BLT. That's been our summer routine. And then we go away again, and we come back for dinner. And it is a bit – it's ping-pongy during mealtimes. Other than that, we try to leave each other alone.
But we also get to edit each other's work. So I always know – I mean, Kate's my first reader and my best reader. So I always know I'm going to her with a piece. And I'm doing this crazy serial novel right now. So I'm giving her the work. And she's not only giving me line edits, she's giving developmental edits as I'm working on it, which is fantastic. You know, so we're really lucky in that way. So
in-house editorial service.
And we get creative, we get to feed each other creatively, which is pretty rare.
And literally.
Yes.
It's pretty beautiful. I'm into it, man.
We're lucky.
It's a good rhythm.
I'm going to treasure it
as long as we can keep it going, you know?
Cheers.
Yeah.
Kate Lebo and Sam Ligon share living quarters in Spokane, Washington. Kate is the author of A Commonplace Book of Pie and Pie School, Lessons in Fruit, Flour, and Butter. Sam identifies as a writer, educator, talk show host, teacher, goat, and donkey enthusiast. Look for more information about their work at mtpr.org. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Bo Baker, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.